In the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sustainer. Amen. Astronomers around the world turned their telescopes towards Jupiter because they knew something incredible was about to happen. It was July of 1994, and 35 years earlier, a comet named Schumacher-Levy 9 had gotten a little too close to Jupiter, our solar system's largest planet, and Jupiter's gravity grabbed hold of this comet, and its fate was sealed. Schumacher-Levy 9 began to make these giant elliptical orbits, traveling 30 million miles out into space, and then swooping back by close to Jupiter. And each time it passed by Jupiter, Jupiter's gravity grabbed tighter and tighter and tighter, every 2 years spinning by again and again, until July of 1994, when this comet slammed into Jupiter's atmosphere at 130,000 miles an hour. Astronomers watched in awe as this comet was consumed by explosions, some of these explosions larger than the Earth itself. Everyone knew why this happened. Once this comet was caught in Jupiter's gravity, there was no way it could ever get itself free, not without an outside force. In our Old Testament reading today, the Hebrew people have just left Egypt, just escaped from slavery. You certainly remember the story. Moses stands on the edge of the sea, staff in hand, water in front, Pharaoh's armies behind, and he strikes the water and the waters part, and the Hebrew people walk through on dry ground, not a wet sandal among them. They were finally free, and they started their journey through the wilderness to the Promised Land, and that's where our reading picks up today. And you know what happens immediately? They get thirsty. Now, it's not surprising. They're in the wilderness. There's not a lot of water. The sun beats down hot on them. But notice the gravitational pull of this story. They don't just ask for water. They start criticizing Moses for leading them out of Egypt. Did you bring us out here to die? In other words, maybe we should go back to Egypt. That's the pull they're feeling, to go back to literal enslavement. But when the thirst comes, the uncertainty grows, the anxiety rises, the grip of gravity tightens to pull them back to what once enslaved them. As the phrase goes, better the devil you know than the devil you don't. And many of us, if we're honest, know exactly what this feels like. We all have Egypts in our lives, places we swore we wouldn't go back to, but when we're scared, they can start to look like shelter. They can look so good, or at least look familiar. But the Bible has a word for this. It calls this bondage. And we do know that feeling. It's easy to point to the obvious, like addictions to alcohol or drugs or gambling. But how many of us spend hours on our phones scrolling instead of taking opportunities to serve someone in need, or to check in on a neighbor, or to call a friend? This gravitational pull, this lure, is so powerful, and especially powerful when you feel lonely or unseen or unimportant. Just like the Hebrew people, when life seems like it's falling apart, Egypt can start to look so warm again. And this is where Lent calls us to be really honest with ourselves. Because sometimes we get pulled towards Egypt in our lives, not because we want to do what's evil, not because we love what's bad. It's simply that we're thirsty. We're thirsty for relief, for reassurance, for peace, for comfort. But here's the danger. If we don't realize and name what we need, what we really are searching for, then we'll keep reaching for what enslaves us and think that will rescue us. The thirst is natural. The question is, where will we turn when we're thirsty? As you know, I have a 5-year-old son named Philip. And when he's tired or when the day has been too much, he doesn't always know what he needs. Sometimes he melts down over the smallest things, the wrong cup, the wrong snacks, the wrong shoes. Last week I put his shoes on the wrong feet. And as a parent, you realize that the wrong color shoes generally isn't the problem. He's exhausted, he's overwhelmed, he doesn't like daylight savings time, neither do I. But as adults, we're not that different. We just hide it better, or at least we think we hide it better. But the Hebrew people thought that returning to Egypt, returning to their old ways, that would cure their thirst. Instead, at God's command, Moses took out his staff and he hit a rock with it, and water began to flow. God didn't lead the Hebrew people into the wilderness to abandon them. Instead, when all seemed lost, God provided. The people wanted to go back to their old ways, their comfortable ways. But God called them to move forward, and water came from places they never could have predicted. And that's the invitation of Lent, not to pretend you're not thirsty, but to ask, where is this thirst leading me? Is it leading me back to Egypt or toward the risky, holy trust that God will provide even here, even now, even in the wildernesses and deserts of our lives? Over my decade as a priest, I've sat with countless people who've told me variations of the same story. They'll say, I don't know why I keep going back to this. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's drinking, maybe it's anger. And they'll say something like, I promised myself I was done with it. And what I've learned most of the time is that it's not because people love whatever is hurting them. It's because they're thirsty, we're thirsty, and we can search for the living water in the wrong places. Now, to circle back to our astronomy lesson for a minute, I want to tell you about Triton. For millions of years, Triton circled through in a giant orbit through our solar system, and then it passed close enough to Neptune that Neptune's gravity grabbed it. It didn't get pulled into eventual destruction, however. It was pulled into a new, stable orbit. A new allegiance. Triton was captured by a greater gravity, and it became Neptune's largest moon. Lent is not about self-improvement. It's about finding a new focus for the orbits of our lives. We are saved when we are captured by something stronger than the forces that are trying to undo us. A holier gravity, a stronger center. And as Christians, we believe that gravity has a name. It's Jesus. In the gospel reading we heard this morning, Jesus was at a well in the hill country of Samaria at noon, and a woman came to the well to draw water. Now, we're not told many details about this woman, but we do know this. We know that she came alone, and we know that she came at noon. Now, in that world, women gathered together in the cool of the morning, and that's when they went to the well as a community. So the fact that this woman comes alone and comes at the hottest time of day tells us that for some reason that community had become painful, and she's trying to avoid people because they've evoked something in her. Maybe it's shame or regret or guilt. After all, she lived in what was certainly a tiny village, and that means everyone there knew she'd been married 5 times and knew that she was now living with someone who wasn't her husband. Surely this woman is being talked about and gossiped about and judged. So she seems to have decided that the best thing she can do is avoid people altogether, avoid community, avoid others, avoid connection. And then Jesus speaks to her. He doesn't leave her alone. That in and of itself is a miracle, because in that world, a Jewish man would not initiate a conversation with a Samaritan, let alone a Samaritan woman. But Jesus began this conversation, and then he spoke to her, naming the truth of her life. You've had 5 husbands, and the one you have now is not your husband. Now, Jesus is not humiliating her. He's not judging her. He's not handing her a scarlet letter. He's pulling her out of her isolation, out of her hiding. He's pulling her into the community. Because sometimes the most exhausting thing in your life is not the pain of your past, but it's the effort to carry it alone. And then Jesus names the actual thirst, the thirst beneath the obvious thirst. He says, "Everyone who drinks of this water, this well, will be thirsty again. But those who drink of the water that I will give them will never be thirsty." In other words, you are not alone going to be able to fully patch your life together, to find meaning or purpose in another husband or another relationship or something that will provide solace for a day or a week or a season. But you can find a new center, a holier gravity, one grounded in love and purpose, not a gravity that drags you back into the same old ways, but a gravity that frees you to become who you're truly called to be. And in this moment, this woman's whole life shifts. It pivots. Something opens up inside her. And she leaves her water jug behind, even though water is the whole reason she came to this well. Because when you encounter this living water, you stop clutching your old containers. And this woman runs back to the village, the very village that she'd been trying to avoid. And instead of running away from people, she goes into the midst of the crowds and she proclaims, "Come and see." She tells her story to the people who she had been avoiding. The woman who came alone and ashamed to the well becomes the first evangelist in John's gospel. And in place of the old center of gravity, the gravity of shame and embarrassment, the gravity of regret, she is given a new center for her life. A life that can now orbit around a God who loves her. So how do we do this today? Well, this week there are 3 simple things, 3 simple but holy practices you can take on. First, name your Egypt. What keeps pulling you in when you're tired, when you feel unseen? What grip are you struggling to escape? Write it down or say it out loud or bring it into the light. Even talk to a friend about it, because gravity's power weakens. This type of gravity's power weakens when we name it. Second, name your thirst beneath the thirst. Name what you are really searching for. Is it community? Is it purpose? Is it peace? You need to ask yourself, what am I really seeking? And then third, move towards a stronger center, a greater gravity, a holier purpose. You can do this in a very practical way. You can go home, bring your bulletin with you, and maybe reread this gospel passage and think about the love that God showed the Samaritan woman. Or take time to pray when you normally wouldn't. Or come to a midweek service here at the cathedral. Or maybe just in a few minutes, when you come forward to the altar rail and you put out your hands to receive communion, stop and try to clear your mind and ask God to be present with you and help you remember God's love of you. Because the assurance of our faith is that there is a greater gravity. There is a center that is strong enough to rewrite the trajectory of your life, strong enough to pull you out of old and unhealthy orbits. And that gravity is called Jesus. That gravity is the love of God. And when you're captured by this holier gravity, there may still be times when it feels like your life is falling apart, but it won't. God will be with you. Because just as in the wilderness God provided water out of a stone, God will also not abandon you or me. God will provide for us, and we can find ourselves reoriented, rewritten, and with lives that now circle around a center, a gravity of love, the gravity of Jesus.